right, we'll call the meeting to order. Why don't we start by calling the roll?
Mr. Scafalaro?
Here.
Mr. Radke?
Here.
Mr. Waldron?
Here.
Mr. Omar?
Excuse.
Mr. Natsky? Ms. Kellner?
Here.
Mr. Jazinski?
Here.
Mr. Dougherty?
Here.
Ms. Nichols?
Here.
Mr. Chair?
All right, first item is to approve our minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second?
I would second.
All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, we have our standard communication file. I think we were going to get some information back from Transit System, but there's some possible delays in that information, so Sandra?
After I've had a chance, or we've had a chance, to present that information to our county board, then I would be happy to provide update summaries about that information at this meeting.
And just to refresh our recollection, that information was on?
Looking for ridership on Metro Express and how we're doing with Metro Express.
Okay, any hints you can give us in broad terms? Is it better than expected, worse than expected?
We're seeing ridership. It's not it's nothing more than expected. I guess you could say it's about what we expected, so.
Okay.
Seeing some gains.
That's good enough for present purposes, I guess. Okay. Any reports on our bus shelters?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Clear Channel Outdoor has now reset 27 shelters that are either on city streetlight or bid circuitry. And there are 4 private power ones that have been set up where we are reestablishing those contracts. Out of the 4 private power, I believe 1 is illuminated. Out of those 4, out of the 27 city or bid, as of last count, which was earlier this week or late last week, there was about 4 or 5 of them that were illuminated. Now, since then, I've been in contact with the city engineer, both by email and by voicemail. And my understanding is that the DPW has sent out 2 people to review the electrical connections from the city side, both on the streetlight and on the bid circuitry. And that's about where I have it, but that the city has gone out and is now going out to make those connections. And then we've also have reached out to all the bids, Avenues West, East Side, Brady Street, Rural Works, and of course downtown, because we had the utility agreements never were terminated. They were always active. We just reduced the payment to 0 when they were unilluminated. So now we are going back to amend each one of those utility agreements so that they can be activated.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, so will we just then expect the amended agreements to come before the bid so their boards can act on them? Is that how we're going to proceed with that?
Dave has some information for the downtown bid that he was going to discuss with you personally.
Great.
But he has been in either direct contact or has exchanged messages with each of the other bids.
Okay.
We'll talk to you after the meeting.
Yeah, it's not a... This is actually probably the easiest component of everything. It's just to have the utility agreement amended. So out of the 31 that were originally, or 31 that were originally lit that were in the city streetlight or bid circuitry, 27 now have been reset up by Clear Channel Outdoor. Three of them no longer exist. They had to be removed because of development at the sites. And then there's one additional one that is kind of outside the downtown loop. It's on the near south side, and that needs to be reset. And that would be the last one within the bid or streetlight. And then we had 14 that were private power. Four of them have been reset up. So we have 10 more private power and then two direct connections to WEPCO through meter. And then that would set up the, all the original footprint then would be reset on Clear Channel Outdoors side of the connection.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any word on our valet parking ordinance?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Richard Withers, Legislative Reference Bureau. The city attorney has provided us with an opinion I've got copies here that I'll share with the board. And the opinion comes down on the side of advising that the spaces that are set aside for valet parking should be treated in the same kind of manner as a loading zone, and that is made available to anyone in the public once they are set aside and made non-parking for the periods of time that we were envisioning. That is the late evenings on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. We're in discussion now, and we'll want to talk with the chair and others about moving ahead with an ordinance provision that would add these to parking controls. And we need to explore at this time whether this is going to be a pilot program, whether each of the areas that might be set aside for valet parking should come separately before the council or included in the parking controls ordinance. Those mechanics can be worked out. I believe that the businesses that at least I've had any conversations with seem to be willing to cooperate. Again, the designation specifically of the sites and the numbers is the area where there will be some negotiating.
So a business would simply apply for a loading zone?
That could be one approach. The other approach could be simply a designation by the Public Works in cooperation with the police department based on traffic patterns. Rather than leaving it to individual areas to apply. I'm not convinced that the businesses will be eager to step up and say we'd like a spot in front of our business.
Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Do you feel that hesitation might be because of the cost involved or the removal of potential patron parking from the
patron front? Parking.
Okay.
That at least that's what's been discussed.
What if is there a possibility that the valet company could be the one responsible for applying for it with approval from the adjacent property owner, I wonder?
I haven't explored that, but that certainly is a possibility. We don't have a process at this point for officially recognizing valet companies, but services that provide valet operations include businesses and that have premises, and it is possible that we could work that out, and then the business would be a necessary agent or
yes.
part of the process.
And to some degree, I think then that gives us some recognition of who is operating that business at that location.
And that would also provide more support for actually putting up signs that say valet parking. Mm-hmm. Even though that's like a loading zone, we assume it's for the business but the public can still park there, or not park, but load. That certainly is a good direction to go.
So what do you recommend we do?
I recommend that we come back with a title at least, and perhaps an ordinance draft subject to approval by sponsor in September, and move forward with that. I think the primary issues that will need to be discussed will involve the police as well. And so they should be invited to the next meeting, I think.
Got that. Well, as Jean-Luc Picard would say, make it so.
We shall.
Bravo.
Related to that, there has been a lot of discussion about also the parking of food truck and food vendor operations.
Yes.
And just for information purposes, there was a fairly comprehensive article this week in the Wall Street Journal discussing the issues that have come up around the country, in particular Chicago and Chicago area, and I'll pass that out. The opinion by the city attorney will also have an effect on any attempts that we may make through ordinance to establish areas for those food vendors. And so we'll want to look at that carefully when we pursue some of the options that have been discussed about setting aside certain areas for food vending.
Well, what's the current state of regulation?
The current state is that they are treated like someone who has a parked vehicle. There are some informal arrangements that have been made, and Ms. Nichols may have more information on that related to last year's Cathedral Square events, and now the downtown Red Arrow Park events. Those have been largely informal agreements worked out with vendors to avoid some of the issues that have come up.
So currently they're treated as just any other parked vehicle subject to whatever parking restrictions exist for that location?
That's correct.
With the exception of designation of a special event, which is happening now every Friday at Red Arrow Park. And so it's like any other special event, it is designated as a space with the meters being hooded so that they are not then in violation of the two-hour parking regulations. But there has been a series of ongoing meetings in the Department of City Development and Department of Public Works, also involving a variety of the mobile food truck operators and the brick-and-mortar restaurateurs who have had concerns about them potentially infringing upon their businesses. And I think it's been the desire and the intent of the city to provide a nurturing environment for entrepreneurs who are operating within the realm of the law and proper licensure, and to create an environment that is encouraging for the mobile food truck operators, but also in a way where it's not impeding upon businesses that are brick and mortar.
Is the category food truck operator, is that a licensed function at this point?
A food dealer must be licensed.
So they require the standard food dealer's license?
That's correct.
No additional licensing as a mobile operation?
No. Not.
Has that been explored?
Well, there is food peddling. It is a separate category, but of food license. But a license that is not related to food has not been explored.
So has that been explored? A separate licensing regime for mobile food dealers?
I believe that's part of the current scheme, and I haven't been part of those discussions.
Well, it's health department to a point. I mean, you could have a two-level licensing. I mean, you license as a food dealer and you go through the normal health department review, but then you're also licensing a vehicle for a particular activity, correct?
That's correct.
You license taxi cabs.
That's correct.
You could license
Taxicabs are licensed because of authority specifically given by the state about taxicabs. However, it may be a little bit more like the kinds of permit that we say when you want to sell a car on the street. That kind of an operation is a business permit. We cannot regulate it as part of a traffic regulation, but we can as part of a business regulation.
Mr. Chair, there is discussion about it being a two-part process because there are also now mobile truck operations that are popping up that are also selling accessories and shoes, and so we're trying to be progressive and not over-regulating, but having some kind of controls and knowledge of the kinds of sales that are going on in the streets. So food truck operators do get licensed by health department also because they have to have a licensed kitchen in which they're preparing the food.
No, I understand that, right.
So I think my belief is that they're working on a licensing process, whether you're selling food or handbags, in addition to the health department license. But that it's being explored right now by the departments collaboratively.
Mike? I'm not familiar. I know Commissioner Ghassan Qurban has been working personally with regards to the food vendor truck sales. And as Beth indicated, we have been issuing special event permits so that we can reserve the parking on Fridays around Red Arrow Park for the food vendors.
But maybe it would be good to put that on the agenda and bring a representative here, Julie Holtz or
mm-hmm. Well, what kind of rules are being or regulations are being imposed in other cities?
Well, in Chicago, for instance, they do have restrictions that have to do with distance from a brick-and-mortar establishment.
Okay.
Our city attorney has at least informally suggested that we might not be able to do that here based on some issues related to competition, commercial competition and favoritism, but that could be explored. In other cities, it's a whole hodgepodge across the country. Some of it is health based. Some of it is purely public safety, transportation based. We can provide more detailed analysis. There's been a lot of work. I know my colleague Amy Hefter in the Bureau has been working on drafting in this area as well, and she may have some further information we could provide.
All right. So, is there any timeline where we expect to get some actual proposals in place?
I know that there was initially some intent to try to have something in place by this summer, but I think that the operations, trying to see if the special permits and other kinds of more informal arrangements would work and how that would work, they wanted to try that first before moving forward.
Okay.
The last item I did want to note was that the council, of course, did adopt a resolution on the bike share program that
right.
calls for a report back in November with any recommendations with regard to ordinance changes, resolutions that might be needed to facilitate the establishment of a bike share system that is largely coordinated by the nonprofit that made the presentations to the board. I do have an update this week from Chicago, which has one of the systems that is more city-sponsored and organized, they are delaying implementation until next year, next spring. New York continues to hold off, although I think that probably in the next couple of weeks they will actually start the operation of their system. This is the article from the Chicago Tribune on that. I will see if there are any preliminary updates that may be brought to the board's attention in September, because at that time, if the local organizations have not made significant progress, it may be that it will take another year to implement. And we wanted to make sure that members of the board, if they have any questions or need some information that we could help with, please feel free to contact the Bureau. I'm going to be gone for the next couple of weeks, but Ted Madden and Richard Paff will be happy to make sure that you get what you need. Thank you.
Very good. Anything else?
Not today, Mr. Chair.
Sandra, you got anything for us? Gary? All right. And I guess, are there any topics that come to mind that we want to discuss next month?
Will we be able to get an update on the streetcar?
Well, we can put that on the list, yes. Mike, carry that back to Kassan.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Well, that's,
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd just like to acknowledge yesterday's event that opened the Wisconsin Avenue Bridge over the Milwaukee River as a very successful project, and your kind words were very much appreciated.
Well, we're back to running the trains on time. That's good. And are the buses restored to regular service patterns?
We did as soon as we could, right? And it was around 6 p.m. I said we waited for rush hour last night, but got our signage, got folks out there bringing people back to where they needed to go. No, it's Wisconsin Avenue now. So we had a few stragglers, but all seems well with our passengers.
You know, speaking of bus stops and the Wisconsin Avenue streetscaping, weren't there some bus shelters proposed that have never been actually installed?
I'm not familiar with that.
Let's get an update on that, too, because as we were discussing bus shelters, it occurred to me that there was at least one location where the property owner made a very big stink and a bus shelter was not installed. It was proposed to have been installed. And that's at the southwest corner of Broadway and Wisconsin Avenue. Pat Keating Khan.
Is that a situation, I'm not familiar with it, was that a situation where Milwaukee County Transit applied for a bus shelter and the city denied it in the
no,
public right-of-way?
No, I think the property owner in question went directly to, first screamed and hollered at me, and then I delegated that listening requirement to Jeff Polensky so he could listen to the screaming and hollering. And I think the decision was made to just forget about it. But I thought there was, that property owner was clearly under the impression that a bus shelter was about to be installed, and this was a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just quietly never was.
All right, we will report on that next meeting also.
Because there should be an original, you know, spec that provided where things were going to go in terms of planters.
Well, from the downtown streetscape project.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, I think there were some omitted that were originally plan to be installed for various reasons. So let's talk about that too.
Mr. Chair, one other thing that just prompted, we also, I don't think I ever got closure on the taxi cab stands on Water Street. We were going to see how this summer was going with the police department. So maybe, I mean, maybe not at the next meeting, but an upcoming meeting, we could bring Captain Bastings back just to see how that issue is working itself out.
Okay. We can note that too. Put him in the loop. And then we got those day passes and 3-day passes all ready to go?
Ready to go. They're part of the discussion at MCTS, different care forms that we'll be able to start with our new smart card system that we're going to have.
When is that scheduled up?
We are in the whole transition implementation planning right now. We're looking at definitely not 2012, 2013, 14 type implementation.
You have a vendor under contract?
Jonathan Bachman is the vendor.
And that's just a consulting contract, or that's actually
No, that's our vendor. So they've been selected, and we've started our design meetings and moving forward.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Two items. One is that in reading the legal opinion, the second page, it talks about restricting the use, or the city can't restrict the use of certain types of vehicles. And I wondered whether how that relates to the topic of restricting the access to Water Street by limousines and taxis or other things, whether that would also apply to that effort, because the use and even one of the cases they've cited appears to restrict that approach. Not that I'm suggesting, I think it's a good idea, but I wonder whether or not that's something that could be somebody could take issue with.
Well, this legal position has been hotly contested for some time. It's been the opinion of many that this position, as expressed here again, is an exceedingly conservative one. And I'll give you an example. The preferential parking permit system on the east side, mm-hmm. where residents get a parking permit that allows them to basically park limited on their street, whereas everyone else is subject to 2-hour restrictions or whatever, and they get an actual placard that they put in their window and so forth. The city attorney asserted that that required an amendment of state statute, which happened. Yet we've gone back to the state legislature and have asked them, well, let's amend it again and expand it to the Yankee Hill neighborhood, the Lower East Side. And the response back from the state legislative reference bureau is, well, you don't need an amendment. You can do it now. So it's the state's position that no statutory changes are necessary. City attorney keeps insisting that they are. We've been at these loggerheads for 20 years. So as a practical matter, people just do things. They double park, they load and unload in the middle of the street, they put their sign out, and it just happens. Technically, probably illegal. Could they all be ticketed? Yes. Does the police exercise discretion? Probably so. So that's why this goofy business about a loading zone versus a proprietary valet parking space is a practical matter. If you have a loading zone and you have 5 of your employees standing in it, you know, the average non-patron who's loading for across the street is not going to just drive in there and incur the wrath of 5 people saying, get out of our space. Although technically they could. So in the real world, this position is ridiculous, actually, because it doesn't work anywhere near how they claim it's supposed to work. So I don't know what to tell you, other than do whatever the hell you're doing now and don't worry about it.
On an entirely different matter, but somewhat consistent with that philosophy, is that in many cities, in fact, probably most major cities now, there are mobile device applications where you can end up calling for a cab or other public conveyance. And in many of those communities that they've been using non-licensed vehicles to provide that service. And it hasn't come to Milwaukee yet, but there are those applications, and there's a number of them. those applications. And I think we'll need to be prepared to try to address that, and probably the most effective way is probably through really vigorous enforcement, because what happens is that they'll only serve those individuals, the phone apps will only serve those individuals that already have an account with them. They won't serve individuals in some parts of the geographic area. They won't end up serving people that don't have major credit cards. It is a and they charge a fee in addition to what the normal cost would be. But it's the rage right now in many, many cities. And it'll be here in Milwaukee, whether it's Uber or Taxi Magic or four or five other major players.
Why don't you give us a report on that?
I shouldn't have opened my mouth. Sure.
I'd be curious as to how that's all working.
There's a lot of cities who have tried to restrict their entry, but it's very difficult to do. And I think, I think the only way to do it is going to be through really rigorous enforcement, because if they're using a non-licensed operator, and many times they are, it's a very difficult, just trying to hit a moving target, if you will, in terms of enforcement, because that vehicle pulls up and the customer gets in and they're gone. So it's very difficult to do. They've set up some stings in certain cities to try to create that type of enforcement. D.C. did it recently, where they the public entity set up a sting where they called up and ordered a vehicle turned out to be unlicensed, and they find the operator. But it is going to come to Milwaukee, and I think we just want to maybe start thinking about. I can provide some articles.
Good, that'd be useful. Yeah,
for that. But it will be an enforcement issue, I suspect. What it's worth.
All right, well, I guess that concludes our business, so we stand adjourned.